This is The 10 Points, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10 Points, because you refuse to be silent.
It's the fifth Saturday. It's a bonus book club, and this is the Santa Moran Radio Book Club, and today we're talking to two authors, Mercedes Lewis and Stephanie Duell. Mercedes, are you on the line?
I am. Hi.
Always good to talk to you. You've been on the show before. The shows that I remember that you were on, in 2016, you were on LaShonda Catrice Barnett's book, and then you were also on when we talked about Audre Lorde a year later, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And I thought it was about time we featured you for your own writing. Do you want to tell a little about your writing that you've done to date, your book of poems and some of your other writings?
Sure. I put it on my author page on Facebook that I had finally graduated from panelist to guest. I'm only kidding, but I am really honored to be in this position. But anyway, my writing. I'm glad that we only have half the show because my process is horrible.
That is your opinion.
Well, yes, that's true. Well, okay, let me rephrase it. I guess the writing is not horrible, as some people tell me, but my process to get that writing down and out is sometimes challenging. I have a lot of real-life stuff, and then I have a lot of voices from the past that still run through my mind that, you know, I have to battle to get it down and actually share it with people. But the stuff that I have been able to share, it's been wonderful. It's been a blessing, the reactions I've gotten. My book of poetry, as you know, Glimpses of a Fractured Soul, is somewhat biographical, but not quite. I often say of poets, we just lay ourselves bare. We're just out there naked, you know, in a lot of our writing. And my other writing, I was really fortunate and thankful to be a part of a collection of writings called Our Happy Hour that visits the club scenes from the 70s, 80s, 90s. I have a poem and a short story in there that are fun. One of them is based on titles of songs that were popular when I was in the club, Staying Thin, because I think that's part of what got me thin. I also have poetry and an anthology, Roses Red, R-E-A-D, not R-E-D, poems, love stories, and poems that you can share with people that you care about. That was edited and put together by Beth Mitchum. And then finally, I have an erotica, a short story, and an anthology called Women in Uniform, as cops and soldiers and people in uniform, oh my. As far as currently working, a lot of it is still in my brain. Some of it is on napkins and pieces of paper scattered here or there. I hope to get them into something that's shareable at some point soon.
My bet is that you will do it. There's a reviewer there in Florida, Jillian Reed. It's funny you said it's burying yourself, because she actually has a line in her review of your book, Glimpses of a Fractured Soul. She says, Ms. Lewis, as other writers, is like Lady Godiva riding down the street naked. These poems reveal the naked inner thoughts, secrets, mystery, and the individual soul of the writer. Let's talk a little bit about poetry and why you're drawn to it. What is it about poetry that makes it the genre that calls to you?
I just love that it is, well, when I first started writing it, I guess it wasn't so much to share as to get some thoughts and things outside of myself and other things in life that I just found interesting and humorous or whatever the case, thoughtful, and wanted to get them down. And poetry is succinct. It doesn't require a lot of words sometimes to get the point across. I used to tell one of my aunties who's, you know, a doctor of English and, you know, university dean and all of that, I really didn't want to write too much around her because, you know, only in my mind she's dissecting it and whatever. That doesn't happen. But poetry can stand up to that because it's succinct, because of its meter, its temper, its ability to get not only what the writer's thinking across in just a short stanza or whatever the case may be, but also in that writing and getting the writer's thought across, many times the reader will receive it and gather their own thoughts.
Oh, I think that's true. I do love the title because Glimpses of a Fractured Soul, a fractured light, a fractured diamond, as in a quilt pattern, those can be lovely. Fractured we usually think of as brokenness or separated, but, you know, it can be beautiful too. Did you have those two meanings?
I did as well. The cover of the book, actually, you can't see it all that well, but the background over the water, you'll see striations where the glass is fractured. To me, fractured, as you said, indicates a brokenness, but many times in a fracture, unless it is a compound fracture, there's no separation.
Right.
No major separation. But there's enough separation in there that you know that hurt, harm, whatever has taken place. But then it is also beautiful in that fractures heal. And in some cultures, like the Chinese, when they get a cracked bowl, they pour gold into those fractures. And so therefore, they are beautiful and even stronger than they were prior to the breaking or separation.
I love learning things on this show. I did not know that. Let's talk a little more about your process, because you said that it's horrible, I think was the word you used. Do poems sometimes come to you in a burst, almost complete? Do they sometimes, you know, it's a labor where you're struggling with every line, or do you have both within one book?
No, oftentimes my brain is much faster than my hands or my ability to remember what my brain just thought. So they come to me in bursts. And I try to get the whole thing down, and sometimes I'll have to revisit it. I used to write and think that because it came to me in a burst, that was it. Get it down. Ooh, great, and it even rhymed somewhere, or this match that. But I found when I was preparing to actually do the book and revisiting some of the things that I had written down, they are not necessarily finished.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I had to go in and move some up to get the flow right. Sometimes I needed to add something, or something came to me based on what was already there that, oh, yeah, I need to add that. So it started out as burst, but as I grow, I guess, and evolve in the craft, it becomes more of a get that first thought down, but then don't think it's finished unless you've reviewed it and determined, wow, okay, that's it.
That's very similar to what my friend Miguel Morales said on the show, is his writing process, and it makes sense to me. I tend to overthink things, so I think that's great. One poem that, to me, was so powerful was Keep Up, because at first I thought, oh, these rhyme. There's kind of a stigma sometimes, and you meet that stigma head on and say, I love to rhyme, and I love that poem. Do you want to talk a little about it?
And I'm pulling it up now, if you'd like me to read it.
Yeah.
But yes, it was addressing that stigma. Some people might perceive it as me saying, you know, in your face, but no. I think knowing myself, it was validating myself and letting folks know that, yes, I know there is more, but this is where I am, and this is what I love.
And that's how it did come across to me.
I got it here if you want me to. Okay, it is, as you said, called Keep Up. I love to rhyme, although some poets act as though it is a crime. Noses turned up, mouths in a smirk, as though I don't understand that my music, my poetry, does not have to have meter, does not have to stand on its foot, does not have to have pace. It can vacillate, take its time. Stop and smell the roses. I may be the only one that gets it, but I understand, and I rhyme anyway. Keep up.
Yeah. What you said, you're validating what you do, and I think it's successful. And also, this book, I hear your voice in it when I read the poems, you know, in my head. As Jillian Reed says in her review, there's poems of hurt, longing, love, sometimes erotic, tolerant, serene. I think one of the reasons that it works so well, You sometimes joke that you've added someone on Facebook because they add spice, but I think you add spice.
Oh, thank you. Add spice, yes. Well, thank you for that. And when I say that, I usually am used to, before I started getting so many people, I try to greet each one and also screen them. But when I say thanks for adding spice, yeah, spice to my life, because spice to your life, to me, like spice in cooking, it's going to make it better, make it more complete, add complexity. And that's what people coming into my life do. So, yes, I have to thank them for adding spice to my life.
Spices also add color. And I thought we would talk about the fact that so often in LGBT fiction, writers of color, I don't know, it just seems as if they're overlooked or something. I'm not sure why that is, but one of the goals of this show is to focus on everybody, all cultures, all races, all demographics, and be diverse. Who are some of your favorite writers? And obviously you can't name them all, and obviously you have many favorites, but who are some of the writers then and now that to you have added depth and breadth and diversity?
Yeah, wow. I could state all the obvious old school, like Audre Lorde and like Toni Morrison. Mm-hmm. You know, they are wonderful. I could also name some people that may not be, well, were not as mainstream or may not be as well known. Naya has a writer. I have not heard from her in years, but her name was Nikki Baker, and I loved her book. And I've oftentimes wondered what's her story and if she's still writing.
I've certainly seen her name. Is it N-I-K-K-I?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Yes, I have seen her name.
Yes, and she has several books under NIAID, which Bella used to carry. I don't know if they still do or not, because I already have them all, so haven't been keeping up. And as far as modern days, I would have to say I love the eloquence of Renee Bess's writing.
Mm-hmm.
I love Elizabeth Sims' quirkiness and humor through her mysteries and such. Penny Mickleberry, Cheryl Head, I could go on and on and on. But I like reading eclectically. I don't want to pin myself down. I mean, there are people I didn't name, like, you know, the standard romance folks. As far as women of color, oh yes, R.J. Samuel, I like her. Also, as far as women of color, yes. Sometimes it seems as though they are not as, I don't know, promoted. I don't know, but they're there. Yolanda
Wallace, yeah.
They're there, and I read their work. A lot of times I find, I don't know if it's a thing I'll have to see as I write my novel. I have one biracial and one what we call African-American, and I used to argue that I'm not an African-American. I'm just an American who's got a lot of stuff in there because I've never been to Africa except to visit. Don't know anything about it except for through ancestors, and most of my answers don't know anything about it. So here we are. Anyway, sorry about that sidetrack.
No, that's fine.
So I intend to keep them there. But I've noticed, even through cover art, there is not a lot of images of people of color. I don't know if you've noticed that. Jay's book does have a woman of color, a black woman in it. And I appreciate her cover because you can tell, because although there are no faces in the visual, there are arms or whatever. And you go, oh, I'm going to pick this up. There's a black person in there. And that is not a criteria for me, but it is also always a wonderful thing to come across and to know. Presentation is there.
It's interesting you say that, because Stephanie Duell will be on the second half of the show, and her new upcoming book, Say Her Name, has, and you've seen her covers, Anne McMahon designs them, and
yeah.
It's a young black woman, or, you know.
Yay.
Yeah, so I think it's on Facebook. And speaking of Facebook, you are one of my favorite people on Facebook, because you make me think. You are frequently someone who shares an article or a meme or an event or an anecdote or a news story, and I think, oh, I hadn't seen that. That's interesting. You and Rashawn Gilmore, another host on The 10th Voice, you're warriors on Facebook.
Oh, well, thank you. I don't do a lot of advocating, I suppose. Well, I do, but I'm not out there in the streets marching a lot or whatever, but Facebook is my social living room, I guess, as it were. And so things that interest me or things that touch me or that I feel that the people in my life at Spice should know, whether it's fun, anecdotal, or news, or I try not to share too much political stuff unless it's light, because we are inundated with it all around.
Yes.
And, you know, some people, sometimes you have to step back, or I have to make a conscious decision, don't even go there. Unless it's something that I can share and feel good about, or feel like it's imparting stuff in a manner that hopefully will make people more aware, expand my high horizons as well as theirs. And as I told someone that had remarked, I always vet my stuff and try to make sure that it's accurate and try to check my sources. And if I'm called on something and I verify it and find out A, B, C, D, whatever, I own that as well. Because, yeah, I enjoy sharing through memes and articles and such with my group of friends.
I want to ask you to read another poem. But first, I just want to ask you briefly how your career in the military has influenced your writing.
Well, my career in the military actually almost stifled my writing, because I was in security and intelligence. So you don't impart information. You don't write things down. I used to have almost a photographic memory for that. Well, I had it anyway, but it came in well in that career field. I think I addressed that in one of my poems, where even not just the words, but the way you write, your handwriting, your strokes, your everything tells a story. And based in my background in the military, very true. So I didn't write things down and didn't do a lot of writing. And as a friend of mine said, after I finally came out of the military and lifted up and saw people instead of machines, he was like, why do you always answer questions with a question? You never answer a question. I had to open myself up and give myself permission to know that it's okay, that all of that is behind me and I am who I am, because Don't Ask, Don't Tell was also during the period of time that I was in the military. Now I'm writing. I will say that it has freed me up and added color, in the sense that I have all of these wonderful experiences and countries and whatever to reflect on, and my experiences mm-hmm. there during my time. But the getting back to the actual writing was almost stymied by being in the military.
I had no idea. That's an interesting answer. I'm glad I asked. Would you mind reading another poem or two?
Sure. What would you like?
How about one of the poems that have to do with survival and triumph over challenges?
Okay.
Followed by microwave. Microwave was one of my favorites.
Is that survival?
but you can't say one of the words in it.
Okay. I'll read that one real quick, and then I will read DCVR, because, as you know, a friend of ours, Sherry, is going through some stuff, and she recently was reading my book, and she told me this was one of her favorites. So it's called Microwave. It's a simple thing, really, and it shouldn't drive me crazy. And I'm sure she doesn't do it because she's mean or because she's lazy. After all of this time and the things that we've been through, you would think that by now she would know just what to do. Please, reset the doggone microwave.
So true.
Yeah, and the thing you said about hearing the voice of the author, you hear my voice mm-hmm. when you read it. That is so true. I love meeting my writers and stuff, because, you know, now when I read Jane Fletcher's books, I hear Jane Fletcher's English accent, and it's just awesome. Okay, and this is for Sherry. It's called DCDR. I don't think I've ever read this one in public before. I am DCDR. I am damaged. I am cracked. I am broken. I am revived. This is a tale of triumph, of overcoming, of being a victor. Don't cry for me, or the child that was me, the child that may have been you. Damaged as a child, damaged, a crack full of fear and angst, but it's not the crack I speak of. Cracked, the crack that shows you something beautiful the first time, then has you chasing ghosts and falling off cliffs until you realize that no matter what it promises it will never take you there again for long. Broken. Not because life or crack broke me, but because one day I looked up from the pit of hell after chasing one lie, one ghost too many, after almost hurting someone over almost nothing, really, literally, almost nothing, because the runner's need was greater than her fear of consequences. I frightened us both that night. Later I cried out, Lord, I've gone as low as I care to go. Revived. That's when he saved me, when I asked. Not a moment too soon.
That's powerful.
Thank you.
Thank you for reading it. I'm afraid we're almost out of time, but I want to make sure that people know how they can find you, how they can contact you.
I'm on Facebook, and I also have an author page on Facebook. You can reach me through my publisher's website, which is Regal Crest Enterprises. You can reach me through my blog on WordPress. It's Mercedes Lewis Blogs. At WordPress. I am on Twitter as Ms. Diva. I think it's Ms. Diva 56 because there's so many divas, you know. And I'm on Instagram. My daughter says I really need to get on there, but I don't remember the thingy because I've been resistant.
I don't blame you.
I know. It's like enough already.
I sure appreciate you being on, and I will be asking you back as a panelist probably next year. You add so much, both common sense and spice, that it just makes everything better. So thank you so much, Mercedes, and I hope to see you before too many months go by.
Okay, fantastic. Hi, Stephanie, in case you're listening. If not, tell her I said hi.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
This is a Santa Moran Radio Book Club. It is a bonus book club, and the next author we are talking to is Stephanie Duell. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Elizabeth. How are you?
Fine. I wanted to ask you to start off. You have a new book that will be coming out. Do you want to tell a little bit about your upcoming book, and then we'll back up and talk about the previous ones?
Sure. The new book is actually the third book in the Sid Rubin Silicon Alley Adventures, which is a young adult mystery series. And the third book is called Say Her Name. And it's a story that I think is about identity, and identity in many different ways. It's about Sid, who is my lead character, Sidoni. Do not call me that. Sid Rubin. And her sort of finding her way into understanding more of who she is and claiming more of who she is. And part of the process is told through three different relationships, through the group of her friends, through the group of a woman she meets and is dating, and through the mystery as to who somebody is in this book. That's kind of what the new one's about.
It fascinates me. All three books have a great deal of suspense and intricately woven plots, and of course the characters, and we see things through this lesbionic brainiac teenager. How on earth do you craft such complex novels?
Oh, wow. First, thank you, I think.
Oh, it was a compliment.
Thank you. You know, the easiest way I can say it sort of is I kind of see it. It takes me a long time thinking out what I want this book to be, how I want it to feel, how I want it to say, all of those things. And then once I sit down to actually write it, I have this sense. And the sense really is that one of the beautiful things about writing, I think, in the young adult world is a lot of that world is given. They're not looking for an explanation like somebody is gay or somebody is not gay. Somebody is black or somebody is white or somebody is Asian or somebody is whatever that may be. Is sort of, unless the story deals specifically in that moment, you don't have to deal further in that moment, which allows you, I think, the lovely part, which is to get through a lot of different aspects of their living in telling a story, because you don't have to get bogged down in that much explanation of it. They're willing to give you that.
That makes sense. Velvet Lounger in the Lesbian Reading Room said, "We, the readers, are unlikely to have any knowledge of this teen cyber world unless we have teens of our own. Yet Duell teaches us, leads us, and manages to entertain us in this brave new world. The characters are charming, the plot convincing, and the crime all too easy to believe." she says, and this is absolutely true as far as I'm concerned, the love shines through from author to page and from Sid and her friends, bathing us all in the light. And she was referring to your second novel, Zero Sum Game, but I think it applies to all three novels.
Thank you.
I think that the point of view is different from the choices that many authors make, and it works so well here in your YA novels, young adult novels. Do you want to talk a little about the point of view?
Well, the novels themselves are told in first person for those people not familiar with the book. So it is Sid's perspective of the story, which again is one of the reasons I'm able to do certain things in the books, because no one can know anything until Sid knows it. So it allows you to stay very, I'm going to call it foreground in the writing, because I can't say, meanwhile, back at the ranch, because Sid doesn't know there's a back at the ranch. So everything comes from her point of view. And I like to think that for me, Sid is a very aspirational human being. I wish that at 17 I had half of what Sid has. And since I get to create Sid and Sid gets to accompany me on the road, I'm allowed to have Sid have these moments. So the fact that Velvet went and said that the love shines through, I have so much love and so much respect for Sid, which, by the way, is not to be taken for, again, anyone who hasn't read this, that Sid actually has anything in life together. But her braveness in not having everything together is what I love the most about her.
Yes, I wish I had her bravery and her smarts and her ability to work with others at even 30. That would have been great. It was almost 3 years ago that I read On a LARP, and I should probably mention that you are published by Bywater Books, and full disclosure, I do edit for Bywater Books. But I was just blown away by On a LARP because I had never read anything about it, and I really wasn't familiar with LARPing, but I was never, ever lost in the novel. Will you tell a little about that first book?
Oh, the first book. The first book, A LARP, for those who are not familiar, is a live-action role-playing game. And it's sort of a mix between, in many ways, a themed costume party, and it can be, you know, a week-long event, and it can be sort of a lifestyle of choosing. And the beauty of LARPs is that people come together to enact storylines that grow. There's no payment in it. There's nothing but this genuine love of sort of creating your own play, your own soap opera world, your own whatever you'd like to call it, where everybody comes in costume and interacts and is transported to different times and places depending on the type of LARP. It, for me, was one of the keys that set off writing the entire series. Was I met two gentlemen who throw a LARP, and they are the masters in their LARP world. They created it. And I was so fascinated by the world that the world became a portion of it. And it is, in the first book, a race to find a killer who is in a LARP. And the kids kind of stumble upon this by accident. I was a big fan of Nancy Drew growing up and all of those mysteries, and, you know, kind of left that group behind and then graduated into Agatha Christie and Niall Marsh and, you know, all the British mysteries and, you know, and so for me, on the complete opposite end of that, I love Scooby-Doo. Die for Scooby-Doo. So Velma, you know, is obviously a big factor behind this. And when I meshed all of that together, the biggest thing was to create sort of some of that energy, but in mysteries that were contemporary and compelling and about now and about kids growing up now.
I have to admit, if I wrote about the dark web and bitcoins and gaming, you know, with people in Asia and all of this, I would be awful at it because I would be throwing all my research at the reader, and it would be clear that I've learned this to a certain degree, but I basically don't know what I'm talking about. But in your books, I've shown them to young people, and you know exactly what you're doing, and you're entertaining and letting us in on these secret worlds. The research is really hidden. It seems completely genuine. How do you do that?
I was very, very lucky when I wrote my very first novel, which is The Carousel, which is in women's literary fiction and has nothing to do with it, but it had to do with restoring a carousel, and I learned everything there was to know about restoring a carousel. The very first edit of that book, I realized that at a certain point, you have to share so that, one, people that have actually been through this process know you didn't make it up, that you actually bothered to do your work. And then the other is, for people who know nothing about the process, there is a real art, and you have to share that art. And then somewhere around two-thirds of the way through the book, I realized I had introduced a character only for the sole purpose of saying, look at this new thing I'm going to teach you. And the person who edited my book said, you need to lose. You know, she was from page 101 to, you know, 1 to 15 or whatever. And I was like, I was appalled. I was aghast. And I realized you take the entire thing out and never miss a beat. You can't say, this is everything I learned. You have to say, here is my story, and let me make sure you are along for my ride.
And you do it so well. You were the recipient of the Delaware Press Association's YA Book of the Year Award. They said about Zero Sum Game, your second Sid Rubin novel, diversity is so normal in Zero Sum Game that it feels like, quote, other, quote, no longer exists. And that's high, high praise.
That is one of the genuinely most breathtaking things somebody could have said about what I write. I was very lucky. I grew up in a neighborhood that was diverse. I went to a school that was diverse. From New York, in case anyone listening can't figure that one out. To me, again, that's the beauty of the world. We are all who we are, and that's fine. And that is not the same thing for me as saying I don't see color. Actually, what I see is I see all of the color and all of the abilities and all of the this. That's okay. That's who they are. That doesn't make them a better friend or a lesser friend. It makes them the person that has that name that is Sid's friend.
And Sid herself has, if I remember correctly, a French mother.
Yes.
Yeah, the fact that the team is racially, culturally, sexually diverse, it just adds so much intrigue and interest and complexity to the novel.
And in the new book, if I may, there are two what I will call enormous underpinnings inside of the book. And one of them has to do with the deaf community, and one of them has to do with slavery. And so, again, it's just opportunities to grow their world, our world. But, again, it just exists. It's not an opportunity to say, oh, let's shine this spotlight and pull out of the book for it. It's, no, this is just one more piece of who they are, who they know, where they go, what they do. And a mystery, of course.
Yes, and fun and exciting. What interests me is you're never didactic, you're never patronizing, you're never clueless, never do I think, oh, she doesn't know what she's talking about, and your excitement about the mystery always shines through. Do you ever, and I suspect the answer is no, but do you ever bore yourself when you're writing? Because I can't imagine it.
I frustrate myself sometimes when I'm writing. I don't bore myself ever, I don't think. I think part of the challenge of what I write is, you know, one day perhaps I'll write something I know and it will make my life simpler. When I set out to write, say, her name, again, for people who don't know this, most writers, there's always the joke, which is, are you a plotter, somebody who writes an outline and all of that, or are you a pantser, do you fly by the seat of your pants? And I have in my head something I think I'm going to write. Is not really being a plotter. I'd say that's a little more on the pantser side. Mm-hmm. And in my head, I have this great story. And in this particular case, I'd say her name, I was on the phone with one of the people who kindly let me bend his ear and ask him some questions to make sure I had research correct. And he blew up exactly where I thought the book was going. I was like, oh, no. He was like, it's not going to work that way. Problem. So, and yet, what I will say is, in exchange for his blowing up my plot, he gave me something that turned out to be so perfect and emotional that I would have missed completely.
Well, that's a fair trade, then.
Oh, it was more than a fair trade. I owe him a debt of gratitude for that one. But, you know, it was, you know, for all the research you do, and you're sitting there, and that's what I mean, you know, we all come to something, it doesn't matter what it is, with assumptions. And the more open you are to being educated, hopefully, the more you learn, the more you grow, the more exciting it becomes, and hopefully it translates into the writing.
No question. You mentioned earlier Nancy Drew. What genres do you read now? What kinds of books? Who do you read?
Oh, it's a tough one. You know, I read in between writing, because I find I don't do a lot of reading when I'm writing. But when I'm writing, I read almost exclusively nonfiction, because otherwise somebody's fiction idea was really good, but it wasn't yours.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to read very little fiction. I read a lot of nonfiction when I'm writing. And then when I finish a book and all that, I tend to kick back and I read. Still love a good mystery. Can't say I don't love a good mystery. I read a lot of books that will have been recommended. I keep a list of books that will have been recommended while I was busy doing whatever. And those will run fairly pretty much across the board. But I do like a genre read. I have to say, I like mystery. I like a lot of sci-fi, a lot of fantasy. Not so much fantasy, I shouldn't say, but spec fic. It goes really across the board.
Well, nonfiction and mystery are two of my top favorites. So that makes sense to me. You mentioned The Carousel, your first novel. And I want to ask whether the Sid Rubin mystery series wraps up with this third one, Say Your Name, or it's just on hiatus, or you're going to write another novel similar to The Carousel. What are your upcoming plans?
What a terrible question. the day I finished the draft of Sid Rubin, and when I'm in the throes of that, I hear Sid and Jim and Imani, you know, I hear them all so well. I hear them because I have to hear them to get the rhythm down. And they're saying all sorts of things. And in that moment, I could just keep going, but I need to go edit and do all the things we have to do. So right in that moment, I think, I have to write another one. A week after I turn in the draft and the notes start to come back about all the things I'm going to have to edit, I think I'm never writing another one.
Editors are the worst.
They are the worst, but we love them dearly because we would all sound so much less impressive without them. For anybody who needs proof of that, you know, I mean, look, we all know To Kill a Mockingbird. There's the proof of what an editor can help you achieve. Not that I'm putting myself on that planet, but just in the difference between the two books, one of which didn't get edited and one of which did. You know, I don't know. I haven't resolved what I'm going to do next. I think I'm going to write a script because the time commitments are different. I have an idea for a fourth novel that really intrigues me if I can get it to think its way through, because that's my big clue that I'm on to something. I start to literally visualize what it will look like. Outside of that, I'm toying. I won't write something until I know that I have it in me. The ability to turn out words on a page is breathtaking to me. And that runs from some dear friends of mine like Rachel Spangler to Stephen King. I mean, the ability to put down words, and they're good words, and the stories are different, and a bark, you know, and just, I'm a torture for each word I pick writer. So it takes me a long time, so I really have to believe that there is merit in my thinking, that my heart has married it enough to.
What literary events do you enjoy and do you have coming up? You've been to Klexicon, haven't you?
Yes, I was at Klexicon, and Klexicon, it was wild, it was informative, it was educational, well done. I say to the people that are starting Klexicon and people who might be interested in sort of going to a fan fiction-oriented event, it was a blast. Now, this year, there will be a new convention called QFX that I'm looking at. Gulfport has one of these wonderful events that's not large, it's growing every year. Allison Solomon runs it, and it's just, boy, if you want to hang out with some authors and just learn a few things and get up close and personal, it's quiet, it's in a lovely town, it's a beautiful thing. I would say the same thing for Women's Fest, which will happen in Rehoboth Beach, and that's a wild time. And again, the number of writers that are there, and easy to access and easy to chat with, and the event's just an extraordinary weekend.
Gulfport has, it's named Readout, right? And it's in February usually. And Women's Fest in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware is it March or April?
I think this year goes in May. They and Klexicon are landing on the same week, and I think they tried to shift schedules so that they did not interfere with each other.
Always a good move. I appreciate that. And you've been to the Golden Crown Literary Society as well.
You know, you can't say really enough good things about that. I will say that's more of a writer's conference. And so there's a tremendous amount of, for anybody who might be listening and says, you know, I'm interested in meeting my favorite authors, or I'm interested in learning the craft. That's a spectacular time. Everybody's there. And the generosity of every fellow author to each other is really remarkable, because it's a small group. Now, we all want to, you know, float that boat higher.
And there were some wonderful panels this year. I know for me, I enjoyed Renee Bess's historical talk. There was a panel on Generation Gap with authors, Anne McMahon and Lee Lynch and Anna Burke.
Well, I have to say, and for myself, I'm just gonna jump in here and humble brag for a moment.
Oh, please.
I got to sit on a panel with Melinda Lowe and Rachel Gold. You know, and if anybody doesn't know Rachel Gold, I can't say enough great things about her as just a person to sit with, but also, of course, being Emily is, you know, Melinda Lowe and Ash. I mean, these are groundbreaking books by groundbreaking writers. And Cindy Rizzo was on that panel, and she's a brand new YA book coming up. So that was a wonderful panel.
You're not humble bragging because I was there and it was fabulous. I really, really enjoyed that. And then, of course, Melinda Lowe was a keynote speaker. There was a lot on offer. Do you go to any non-LGBT literary events, or is it...
Well, no, last year I did a number of them because I did a number of mystery panels. Sleuth Fest, which was a wonderful panel as well that I was on, and a great conference, and VoucherCon. And I owe a debt of gratitude to VoucherCon because I met several of the people who review for the mystery genre itself, people who I did not know. And, you know, most people who review that aren't your big newspapers, most of those people are reviewing because they have a love and a passion for that genre. And that differs from reviewer to reviewer. But Christopher Zagorski from Bolo Books, because I got to meet him, was able to say to me, you know what, get me your stuff, I'll take a look at it. Unbelievable. VoucherCon is just, if you like a mystery, you walk in the door, and I don't remember what the fees were to attend, so I can't speak to that right now, but you paid the fees to go in, and you walk in the door, and they hand you a basket of books that more than covers the fees you just paid. It was exceptional.
Cheryl Head has attended that. And I was really interested in what she had to say about it.
Let's talk about her new cover for a moment, if we can, only because Cheryl Head, full disclosure, is not only a friend of mine, she's also a fellow author in the Bywater family of authors, and she has a new book. Her new Charlie Mack mystery comes out 2 months, I think, before my new book debuts, and her cover is just fabulous. And for anybody who hasn't read and who loves a mystery, read the Charlie Mack mysteries.
And Linda is nodding here. Linda, do you want to comment?
Well, you invited me to be part of the book club, and I read the Charlie Mack series. I think it was the third one. I went back. I've read them all now. And when I read a book by holding a real book instead of a Kindle, it means it's really a good book. Otherwise, I couldn't hold it that long. So it was a great book, well written.
Stephanie, one last question. How does someone find you? You're all over the place.
Thank you. I am all over the place. How frightening is that? So the easiest ways are that I have a website, which is stephaniedewell.com. And for those who are listening, it's Stephanie as in STEFANIDEOUL, stephaniedewell.com. If you forget the spelling, check out the book on Amazon. It'll have my name, and it's link right through to me. And obviously Facebook, Twitter, and they're all under my name.
Sounds good.
All your usual suspects.
Stephanie, one of the reasons I enjoy talking to you, you always have such good ideas, and you're so positive. You think way outside the box, which I'm not always good at doing. And you're so good at not just publicizing and marketing your own books, but as you just did with Cheryl Head, other authors too. I just love your philosophy.
Thank you. Somebody who loves my book might not be the right reader for another author, but somebody who might know my book because it is categorized under young adult, or they're not a huge fan of this, or whatever it may be. You know what? I'm so blessed to do what I do and to know other people who are certainly, you know, of a par in some cases, I would say maybe a titch more talented than me. That to be able to say, have you read this book, is just such a great feeling.
I'm afraid we're out of time. I appreciate so much you being on the show. I wish you all the very best in your projects.
Thank you for the time, Elizabeth. It was such a delight to be here.